Good morning, everybody. let me say some words before I start getting you into the vibes of living knowledge. Oh, there's an echo here. Please don't ask me to sing. First of all, I have to excuse the mayor of Girona. He will not be here today to welcome you to Girona. He announced 2 days of mourning because there was a shooting 2 days ago. And this is very sad. And we definitely condemn violence. And our thoughts are with the families of the victims, definitely. And I think this is what we all work for, to solve conflicts in our communities and with our communities. So please excuse him and please let us think. I won't make a minute of silence on this now, but please let's think of the families of the victims, a very sad situation. But I'm very happy to welcome the rector of the University of Girona here, Joachim Salvi. Thank you for supporting us and the local team in making this happen. So thank you very much for that. And I have the honor to talk first before it's your turn. So, thank you. And I will introduce you to the other panelists a bit later. They will present local activities of the University of Girona and very interesting projects. So again, good morning and welcome to Girona. It's the Living Knowledge Conference, yeah, probably you know. And we from the Living Knowledge Network are definitely proud and happy to have so many of you here, researchers, students, civil society organizations, policymakers, from all over the world, and that you all followed the invitation to come to Girona. So, is it already that? I said only welcome to Girona, yes? So, but it's also welcome, of course, to the 10th Living Knowledge Conference. It's an anniversary. It's the 10th edition of the Living Knowledge Conference. And maybe I ask you here, who's in here for the first time at a Living Knowledge Conference? Peter, you're lying. Oh, that's quite a good group. Who attended, let me say, 5 conferences? Yes, and who attended all 10 of them? Remember this face. He can answer all your questions from the very beginning. Yes, on this occasion of this anniversary, and excuse me, Henk, I'm also in for the 10th conference, so you can also ask me if there's something going on like this. It was in the late 70s of the last century when the democratization of science became very popular at the Dutch universities. I think this was, the beginning of a movement of changing the attitude at universities. And by the end of the 90s, the European Commission was thinking of setting up a new policy program. One of those aims was to set up new models of dialogue between science and society at a larger scale. And in this context, to offer new policy tools to decision makers. And you might believe it or not, in June 99, and Henk is here today from this group. Michael Jorgensen, are you here already? I saw you on the list. No. So then, Henk, you're again the only one from this group in the 90s. They were all sitting together in a hot tub in Massachusetts, US. And they were writing the most exciting document they had worked on for years. It was the birth of the first transnational projects for sign shops. SKIPPERS, as it became known in the world of acronyms. And 1999, so it's another anniversary, 25 years of international collaboration between sign shops. Skippers was a collective act of confidence that what sign shops were doing locally had an international dimension. And above all, that this international collaboration added value, and for this, networking was at the heart of the activities. And there have been many more projects following after. I just rush through some of these acronyms. ISNET, TRAMS, Enrich, Peraris, Circlet, Inspires, Science Shops, C-Shops, and many, many more. And these were only the sign shop networking projects. And sign shops by then took roles in numerous more international projects as collaborators. So in these consortia, in many consortia of European, international, global activities, you can find sign shops taking a role of bridging and moderating community engagement. This collaboration from these very, very first days is labeled living knowledge. And knowledge only lives by being transformed, reconfigured, and used to solve the problems of everyday people, to empower them, and to help them act in their own interest if it's needed. The first project allowed for the first Living Knowledge Conference in January 2001. It was in Leuven, in Belgium, and the coordinator of this first project, the coordinator of Skippers, gave a speech, and I want to quote her a bit. I think it's good to mention that science and society have always had contact in a way. We're talking about 2001. But in different times and contexts, this interaction was shaped in a variety of forms. And as we can see today, this has been formed in a variety of ways and in a couple of countries. So in order to continue, spread out and improve and strengthen this work, a conference like this every once in a while and a network structure is very crucial. So these have been the words of 2001 and we followed it. And so we are here, we have a network and we have a series of conferences. And since then, the Living Knowledge Conference toured across Europe. So we have been in Seville, we have been in Paris, Belfast, Bonn, Copenhagen, Dublin, Budapest, Groningen, and now we are here in Girona. For 25 years now, almost 100 sign shops have been cooperating internationally and globally in this network. They are in close exchange with networks from all over the world. And just to mention some of these. And in this moment, in this situation, I also want to mention the C2U Expo, Community to University Expo, from our partner organization, the community community-based research in Canada. Joanna, Amanda, are you here? So there's Joanna coordinating CBR Canada, or at least you did that. Joanna, Amanda, are you already here doing it now? No, this is just a phone. And I just want to take the opportunity and highlight the next C2U Expo conference in May 25 in Alberta, in Canada. No, in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, to be exact. And this is what we agreed from very early stages of our collaboration, that we alternate with our conferences. So in one year it's in Europe, in the other year it's in Canada. So thank you for this long and many years of collaboration. So over the years, many approaches have been developed to collaborative research with and for communities. Different names, different histories we are now all aware of, they have in common an urge to co-create and share new knowledge for an inclusive equitable, healthy and sustainable society. So what have we learned in these years? It requires diversity, it requires openness, and it requires mutual learning. It needs time to build up trust between partners. It takes time to develop confidence and a culture of recognition, so that citizens, communities are there to ask their research-related questions and develop project ideas together with universities. When Living Knowledge started, neither engagement or participation was on the agenda. Nobody was talking about responsible research and innovation. Nobody was talking about open science or co-creation, citizen science or multi-stakeholder. So thank you to all of you making this happen, that these approaches, these names are more common in the research environment, in the research community. And as we consider the progress that has been made across Europe over the recent years, the greatest challenge of all is to address the constructive possibilities for moving forward. How do we want to do research? How do we want to teach? How do we want to bring actors in? And who has access to the knowledge and who has its ownership? So let us train the muscle of imagination. What we cannot imagine cannot come into being. No one works in a science shop to become rich. But every project, every consortium I have seen, joined or initiated, is carried forward by highly socially motivated individuals, universities, and communities, engaged in dialogue, who usually forever change the nature of the group who commissioned the research. Therefore, we hope to talk with you about science shops, about research shops, living labs, citizen science, participatory action research, community-based research, service learning, user-driven information, and what you call your activity. So, here we are at the theme of the conference. Let's discuss how to build and sustain next generation engagement. But before we will dive into this fascinating facets of the conference contributions, I have the pleasure and the honor to pass the floor to those who made this conference possible. Kim Salvi, Rector of the University of Girona, thank you so much for making this event happen and supporting us in gathering at this wonderful place in this wonderful city. So please, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, dear Professor Steinhaus, coordinator of the Living Knowledge Network. Dear President of the Social Council of the University of Girona, dear Vice Rector of Strategic Projects of the University of Girona, dear members of the Scientific Committee of this conference, speakers and participants. The concept of civil society, I have to say, that is widespread and historically recognized in Catalonia. We speak of civil society to refer to all those entities, to all those social movements that on the one hand have been able to bring together the desires, the ambitions and claims of citizens, and on the other hand have acted as drivers of initiatives that were left aside by the government. Civil society, therefore, as a confluence of interest and as a key actor of progress. In the case of Catalonia, over many years, civil society replaced a government that was not worried about, was against or simply was underfunded to attend the social demands. At the same time, each of the members of this civil society, from entities to individuals, demonstrated their robustness in each of the actions carried out. I say this in the opening ceremony of this 10th edition of the Living Knowledge Conference, because it is the first time that this conference is organized here in Catalonia, and because this conference shares the vision of the importance of individual and collective empowerment to address the major problems and challenges we face all together as society. Hence, welcome to the University of Girona. Welcome to all the participants coming from the European continent and those coming from other parts of the world, such as, for instance, Canada, India, the United States, Brazil, Japan, Malaysia, Uganda, among many other countries. I want to express, as the rector of the University of Girona, that we feel particularly honored to host this 10th edition of the Living Knowledge Conference here in our university. The University of Girona is the first Catalan and Spanish university in the achievement of the Sustainable Development Goals of the United Nations according to the THE Impact Ranking, and is among the first 200 out of 1,600 universities worldwide. Gender equity, quality of education, and sustainability are three of the topics in which the University of Girona outstands according to the THE Impact Ranking. The University of Girona feels honored to host this conference, among other reasons, because we have been insisting for many years on the need for research to have a real impact on society, which is particularly significant in terms of respect for diversity, for environmental sustainability, and for the strong awareness that the university is due to the entire territory and to the entire society, where the university is located. On the other hand, the own experiences presented by professors and students of the University of Girona from the use, for instance, as from the use of the artificial intelligence to food autonomy and social inclusion, represent a large part of the vision behind this Living Knowledge Network. Finally, I want to say that the University of Girona welcomes you in this Aula Magna, one of its emblematic spaces in the old quarter of the city of Girona. This Aula Magna is a magnificent Gothic church from the 14th century, named with the name of Modest Prats, one of the most reputed professors of our university. Professor Prats, in one of his writings, said that university students must seek the truth to serve, the truth to serve the society. And he also stated that the university must pursue the need of a research that is useful, that is shared, to seek the truth that must serve to make us worthy citizens. Besides, in this Aula Magna, a poet from Girona, Narcís Comadira, said in an academic year opening ceremony that the university must not be focused on economic profit and must lift aside the short-term vision. Hence, the university should be focused on social reward and face the mid and long-term needs of the society. And that's what it will be like these days here in this Living Knowledge Conference. From yesterday, when the first meetings of the conference took place, until Friday, the 28th, the University of Girona is the meeting point between academia and society. The conference includes, as you know, talks about sustainability and efficiency, the efficient use of scarce resources, teaching quality, research quality, and social and community commitment. These days, we will talk about co-creativity, about collaboration, about putting together the knowledge at the service of others, of establishing permanent collaborations with social entities. It is with this framework, with this environment and context, that we are very pleased to welcome all of you to this conference and to the University of Girona. I wish you a pleasant stay at the University of Girona and a very successful conference. Thank you, all of you, very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for your kind words. And again, thank you very much for your support and the information you gave that what is happening here within the conference already is based in the philosophy of the University of Girona. Amazing. Thank you. And please, don't let us not forget to thank Alicia Betz, who is in, was there she is, and waving. Thank you very much for making all this possible here in Girona, and Sarah, of course, sorry, Sarah Moon. Yeah. you did a really, really great job, and so we feel very welcomed here. And let's not forget about other people working in the background, the scientific committee. Henk, I have to mention you again. Thank you for supporting that. But also Catherine Bates, who else have I? Emma McKenna, and the whole scientific committee, reading the proposals and supporting the local team in making this happy. Happy as well, yeah? So sorry. Making this happen. So we are happy people here. Let's continue a bit from these more general words, some words on the development of the Living Knowledge Network. But the network only lives by its partners and by the people working with and for communities. And there are a couple of very interesting and fascinating examples of this community engagement here from University of Girona. And I have the pleasure to invite speakers now to showcase their experiences, their program, and their activities here from Girona. And the first one to talk will be Albert Sabater with a project on towards better artificial intelligence in Catalonia and beyond. And just excuse me, before I give you the floor, there's one person I want to mention who accompanies us from the very first day of Living Knowledge. It's Peter Levesque. He's knowledge mobilizer and poet, and coming from Canada, and supported us in all our development with his knowledge and his empathy. So thank you, Peter. So, Albert, please, the floor is yours, and tell us about your activities here in Girona. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for letting me be part of this 10 Living Conference, Living Knowledge Conference here, and thank you very much for the kind words. What I'm going to do in the next 7 minutes is to give you an overview, just a flair, of one of the projects that we are carrying out here at the University of Girona, and which has to do with artificial intelligence. Many of you probably know about artificial intelligence, though this because whether you like it or not. We use it on a daily basis, whether it is in health, in social services, in entertainment, in security, and in various sectors and domains of our lives. But perhaps one of the things that we don't know is that we love AI, but we perhaps don't know that we should take into consideration some ethical issues on board. Not least because otherwise we know that some of the perils and dangers and social impacts that we face can only grow. And before you leave the room, if you don't consider these things important, let me tell you something about the Catalan Observatory for Ethics and Artificial Intelligence, which is based here at the University of Girona. So our mission is primarily to look at the consequences of using artificial intelligence in terms of ethics, in terms of social impact, but as well in terms of legality. And we do that by taking on board a transversal perspective. That means that we hear the living knowledge of people from industry, from academia, of course, but also from government and from civil society. And we do that not least because we are part of the academia, but also because it's one of the pillars of the Catalan strategy on artificial intelligence, but is also embedded in the strategy of the University of Girona, which is called the Summa of Intelligence, that puts natural intelligence at the center stage. It's natural intelligence in a sense that artificial intelligence is human-centric, so we are very convinced about that, but also takes on board or considers collective intelligence as one important part of the story, in addition to using artificial intelligence. Now, our current activities are basically four activities. The first one is to provide the ecosystem with tools that allow the assessment of AI technologies in a way that we move forward towards trustworthy AI. That's an important part of our activities. But we also issue reports and guides so that we raise awareness of the opportunities, but also of the risks that we face when using AI systems of all sorts, not only machine learning or deep learning, but also now increasingly large language models. Now, an important aspect of that, it is also to draft educational resources. We are an academic institution, and therefore an important part of our mission is to provide resources that increase awareness, not only here in the academia, but also beyond, and for those stakeholders that require this information and this living knowledge in relation to artificial intelligence that has to be used responsibly. Now, last but not least, we have an international seminar series that attracts a great deal of attention, but also speakers from all over the world that talk about very poignant issues related to transparency, explainability, safety, privacy, and so on and so forth. Now, we now live in times of great acceleration. We know very much about AI being used in all sorts of domains, particularly in education, but we also very aware of the hype surrounding AI. So it's very important for us, and especially in the 10 Living Knowledge Conference, to keep things to the ground, to make sure that we assess our capabilities and we do not compete with artificial intelligence systems, because there's no such competition. We have to use artificial intelligence responsibly. We have to use it in a way that advances trustworthy AI. And for that, we have to remember one of the great Canadian philosophers, Matthew McLuhan, who more than 50 years ago reminded us that nothing is inevitable as long as we know what is happening. So I wish that we all have a very fruitful and knowledgeable conference. And from the University of Girona, and particularly from the Chair Observatory for Ethics in Artificial Intelligence, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Albert. Really interesting, and this definitely makes clear that AI doesn't work without knowledge, and then we have to think about where does knowledge come from, and it's not just coming from research, and it's not just coming from decision makers, it's coming from individuals, and it's coming on the base of cultural backgrounds, and we should not forget that, and thank you for taking this into consideration when you presented your activities here at the University of Girona. Thank you very much. I now have the pleasure to forward the floor to, Maya-Len Beltran, and she's talking about an example of inclusive research here at the University of Girona. The floor is yours, Maya-Len.
Hello, good morning. I want to thank you first for inviting me to be here and to be able to talk about this project that is so close to my heart. So, as it's been said, my name is Maya-Len Beltran, and I am part of the research group in diversity of this same university. And today I want to talk to you about our advisory committee and the importance of inclusive research. So, as Riva said, in order to understand research as a tool for transformation, we must question how knowledge is made, to value different ways of knowing, and to recognize how our research might affect other people. Qualitative research can help us understand how disabled people view the disabled people's perspectives, but that is not enough. We need ways to ensure that they are fully represented and that their needs and their interests are met. That is why, with the aim of improving research into intellectual disabilities, the idea of inclusive research was introduced at the end of the 20th century. Wansley described inclusive research as an approach that involves people with intellectual disabilities as more than just the subjects of the research. And it was later added that people with intellectual disabilities should also be involved in all the steps of the research process. Recognizing people with lived experience as co-creators of knowledge has the potential to empower people with intellectual disabilities. But not only that, it can also generate a knowledge that is more relevant and practical in real-world settings. This not only enhances the quality of research, but it also contributes to social inclusion and shifting perceptions about disabilities. And this is why, since 2012, the diversity group of the University of Girona has been collaborating with the advisory committee. The advisory committee is made up around 10 adults with intellectual disability, and it meets once a month between September and July here, right here in the university, in the Faculty of Psychology and Education. These meetings last for around 3 hours, and they always start with a coffee, because we believe that socialization is a big part of these processes, and we want to know each other well. So once we have had our coffee and our batteries are charged, we start with the research. So we have 2 hours where we meet, and the researchers in the advisory committee do all the process. They start by choosing the topic they want to research. Then we have to get to a consensus to what we want to research that year. They usually take a year because the research process is slow, but really meaningful. Then once we have chosen our topic, we decide how to do it. So we choose our instruments, who are we gonna interview, who's gonna pass those interviews. And once we have all this data, the researchers from the university help analyze it a bit, because we have a lot of data, and we present it in a way that it might be easier for them to extract the results and the conclusions. And once we have all that, we talk with this advisory committee, and we think about how to want to make the diffusion of this project. Right now, for example, we are promoting the work we did last year about sexual affective relationships of people with intellectual disabilities, and we are talking to entities, services, and families because they believe those were the main people interested in knowing this. So among the research carried out by the advisory committee is this one I just told you about, the one about sexual affective relationships, but we have also research about independent living or the effect of COVID on their relationships. It's really important for us to know what the participants feel about these meetings because it is surely really important and meaningful for us, but we also want it to be meaningful for them. So we ask them regularly how they feel. We usually get really good feedback. And our participants have said that the research process have gave them useful new knowledge. They know more about their rights. They also felt more connected to the community, and they felt an improvement in their personal well-being. Before finishing, I would like to remark that the advisory committee has demonstrated that inclusion of people with intellectual disabilities in research is not only an act of social justice, but a key strategy for generating deeper and more authentic knowledge. Thank you. I hope you really enjoyed these days. Muchas gracias. Es que recasco.
Somehow lost it. Thank you very much, Maya-Len. What the power is in your research and in your activity, demonstrating that it's not about research on a certain community, but doing it together with the community and for their benefits to empower them. Great project, great activity. Thank you very much. And now for something more urban, thinking about us and our food, it's for you, Kim. It's about edible cities, and you tell us about your project on putting urban agriculture into the city of Girona, is it right?
Yes.
Yes,
that is right.
Okay.
Thank you.
The floor is yours.
So good morning, everyone. Thanks a lot for the introduction, Chairman. I'm very glad to be here to explain, to give you a few insights on binding research and action for a truly transformative urban agriculture in Girona. And it's basically some highlights about a couple of projects that we've been working with. So I'm honored to make the presentation, but this project has been, the presentation has been prepared together with my colleagues, Enrique Sue and Alexandra Popertan. In line with the conference, we should wonder how can we build knowledge that lives. I know this is not a simple question, but at least in our work we should constantly wonder how can we bridge the gap between academy and society. What is the position and role of the academia in front of the climate emergency? Indeed, in front of several, multiple crises, no? Social crisis, economic crisis that the world is facing. Are we as researchers aware of the transformation power of the scientific knowledge and do we act in consequence? We should accompany the socio-political processes taking place in our neighborhoods, in our cities, in our countries, continents, and in the planet. So can we make research to become really an engine for a just eco-social transition? I know the answer to all these questions would take very long, but at least I'll try to explain you our experience with edible cities in a couple of projects. It's been a long journey with many different actors involved. This started in 2019 with the EU Innovation Action Project EDICINET, which stands for Edible Cities Network, where both academic partners and EU cities have been working together to foster the implementation of edible cities by promoting urban agriculture projects or nature-based solutions for food production in cities. This project found fertile soil in Girona, since more or less at the same time, there were grassroots movements, the University of Girona and the municipality, that were willing to initiate a pilot project for an edible neighborhood, which was called Menja Sant Narcís. You could translate it to Eat Sant Narcís. Sant Narcís is the name of this neighborhood in Girona. And then this is continuing actually nowadays with a couple of more European projects funded, but coordinated by the municipality itself. They are called Menja Girona, Eat Girona, and which is a planning project for urban gardening and tourism, and Gironat, which is a planning project for rewilding the city with a specific strategic planning for edible cities. But I will focus the presentation in this, the first two projects, the edible city and Menja Sant Narcís. So if we focus on the edible cities network, a few highlights. First thing I'd like to mention is the main, one of the main results of the project, which is the EdisinNet platform. You can find it in ediblecitiesnetwork.com, which we define as the world's meeting place for sustainable urban food systems and green edible cities. This has been developed thanks to the collaboration of a consortium of potential end users, including academic partners, city representatives, SMEs, NGOs, all of them members of urban agriculture initiatives. It includes a lot of functionalities. It's an online catalog to discover, interact, and learn about successful stories of edible cities, with an international community of groups of interest, individual experts, entrepreneurs, city officials, citizens. There is also a section dedicated to resources to explore the free material on edible cities, a news and urban section. There is also two tools freely available, what we call the sustainability assessment tool, to actually assess the sustainability of urban gardening projects, the design, and also the design and planning tool, which supports the design of urban agriculture at both household and city scale. There is also questions and answers and consulting sections to post questions on urban agriculture and get answers from the community. If you are interested, you can find this little brochure there on the table in front, which is, you can scan it and take a look at the platform, okay? It's also actually plant seeds. Then you can use it to plant. But it will not work, it will not grow if you don't scan and browse a bit the platform.
Yes.
Okay, well, some numbers on the EdisinNet platform use. Quite a number of solutions, initiatives, communities, users already involved. Three cities with the edible city bill game, you would wonder what is this edible city. So this is another important achievement from the EdisinNet, which is this was the development and the testing of the edible city game, which is a serious game, which is called a serious game, that allows to represent a neighborhood or a city in a 3D real environment, and allows to study the impact with multiple different type of users, like urban planners, but can be also normal citizens, academics. So allows to study the impact, for example, the co-benefits of the analysis of scenarios, scenario analysis, where urban agriculture is implemented. For example, in terms of the effects on different city impact indicators. For example, the heat island effect, air pollution mitigation, rainwater management, green jobs creation, etc. The edible serious game has been implemented and tested in Sant Feliu de Guíxols. These two acronyms stand for Sant Feliu de Guíxols, which is a city at the metropolitan area of Barcelona, and Sant Peter Pregorici. It's a small city in Slovenia. And then there is also an additional version, a simplified version of the edible city game for educational purposes that has been developed, tested, and is can be freely used. And now the other project, let me give you 5 cents on the Menja Sant Narcís project, Eat Sant Narcís, this neighborhood, about the birth, consolidation, and expansion of this collective project of urban gardening. First of all, a little bit, a few words about the case study. For the people of Girona, the neighborhood of Sant Narcís has always been special. It is known as the neighborhood beyond the railway, a reminder of the physical and symbolic barrier cutting across the city, separating the center from the periphery. The neighborhood is also interesting in urbanistic terms. It has individual houses, green spaces, and large sidewalks, thought as an aesthetic bridge between rural and urban. Created in 1944 during Franco's dictatorship on the outskirts of Girona, the project was inspired by the utopian garden city model. These were usually satellite neighborhoods separated from the main center with green space, proportionally combining countryside, urban, and industrial areas. Saint Narcisse has witnessed a permanent influx of new inhabitants from southern Spain and later from other parts of the world, to become nowadays one of the most ethnically diverse places in the city. And currently, the nicest parts of the city are also have the risk to experience gentrification. Moving to the present times, in this neighborhood, in 2019, the municipality, in cooperation with local organizations, set up the project of the edible neighborhood. It was named It's Saint Narcisse and started as a pilot project in a small street in this neighborhood, the Roma Street, which was converted to a fully pedestrian street. We can see that a key trait in this project is that it starts from a top-down initiative, which is interesting because, at least in Spain, these initiatives that comes from the municipality sometimes are often criticized as attempts to domesticate bottom-up contestants' approaches. However, in this case, the dynamics were more complex. The municipality eventually took its place as a facilitator and not so much as a leader, gradually giving up power to the grassroots movements. Another key characteristic of that project was born at the crossroads of different utopian imaginaries, the urban commons and the shared economy, defended by some of the key activists and local movements, and the political dream of promoting more tourism, defended by the initial municipal project. Specifically, in Menjat Saint Narcisse, there are several social actors and associations involved. You see the Civic Center, a cultural association, La Volta, the neighborhood association, the primary and adults school, the women's collective, association of retired people, etc. University and research institute are also involved. And there is a lot of activities going on, are being organized around the urban gardening. For example, joint planting and harvesting events, training to build and plant ecologically, monthly meetings, co-creation of environmental indicators, etc. And there have been established several relationships, not only at Girona scale, with the other urban gardens nowadays appearing in other neighborhoods, but also at international scale, and with other environmental and social activities. For example, in the framework of the just past semana, first week of the urban nature that was celebrated 2 weeks ago here in Girona. What you see here is it's a drawing by a local artist showing that the pilot project that started as only one street, Menjat Saint Narcisse, has been expanded to several streets in this neighborhood and is continually evolving and growing. And hopefully it will continue growing to the whole city of Girona, because there are these couple of projects, Menjat Girona and Gironat, that are willing to do that. And finally, I'd like to give you some final reflections on how research can help transforming reality according to our experience, really to have fertile soil. No? As researchers for a real transformation, we have the responsibility to get involved in the communities. We need to bridge the gap between researchers and society to understand better what's happening. The success depends on the presence of social, political, cultural conditions on the ground, and how, as researchers, we approach the communities. Very important how we do it. And, of course, also on a little bit of luck, so many times. And finally, the researchers need to be respectful of the many types of knowledge, academic, local, indigenous knowledge, which altogether helps transforming the reality. And I would like to thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you very much, Kim. Fertile soil and municipalities stepping back from leading and taking the role of a facilitator. Fascinating. Great. And what you told me before, it's not about producing food. It's about the social interaction, bringing communities and actors together to work on a common idea, on a common topic. Great. And all your three projects have shown that having the Living Knowledge Conference here in Girona is the right place. So it's the right place for mutual learning. Yeah, so great. And thank you again. for making this happen. And thank you to all of you joining us in here in Girona. And I don't know. Okay, so this is from your presentation. I'm not sure. I had another one. I cannot get back. Anyway, so please keep in mind, this is a conference with a lot of different topics, a lot of interesting approaches. There's a lot of sessions and activities going around arts and arts-based activities. I'd like to draw your attention to these. Please check the program. But we are not here purely for work. We should have fun. And Girona is a very good place to relax after a day full of sessions and being outside and having good food and having good drinks. I'm a beer drinker, sorry, but somebody else has to check your wine. But just a reminder, and there are no strangers in this room here. Yeah, so we are just friends that haven't met before, and I think this is a nice quote which works in this conference. Please enjoy the coming days, have fun, and thank you for being here. You ready? And now for something completely different. No, not really. It's in the line of the conference. Let's get more practical. And I'd like to give the floor to the colleagues now joining Rika. You're hosting the next conference. We're getting an echo.
Yeah.
So the next plenary begins. It's about curriculum engagement. So please take over.
Thank you.
Go on.
Thank you so much again
for joining us here for the opening and your nice words, Mr. Salvi.
Thank you.